From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. One good thing about having done this show since 1996 is it's always fun when certain guests return. One of my favorite guests is Christopher Guest, whose newest project is writer, director, and creator for HBO's the series Family Tree. It's good to have you back here.
Thanks.
I wonder if you're moving to Southern California provoked this thing in you. You started paying attention to the way people tend to be kind of confessional because the kind of orientation that associated with Southern California in the 70s, of people being remarkably confessional. I just wonder if there's something, though, you'd observed,
no.
The difference between New York and Los Angeles.
No, nothing quite so profound, no. No, I think I've always looked at things the same way, wherever I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I grew up mostly in New York, so a little bit in London, but no, not at all. In fact, in cities, for me, because of the nature of how people are out on the streets and walking around, I stand and watch people. And here, because you're in a car, it's actually much less observational.
I guess what I find so fascinating about Family Tree is it's not about Brits who don't want to talk. They can't help talking about themselves.
that's true. I think having found Chris O'Dowd, who I think is this remarkable voice and actor for anything, but for this in particular, because he's so vulnerable and accessible. He's smart and he's funny, but you just get enveloped by this person. And if he were a typically English person, perhaps, that would be more difficult, that would be harder to crack.
I guess I will ask you here how you ended up getting Chris to do the show, because he's the center of the show. And unusually for you, he's the kind of the font of common sense. And generally, you don't find anybody with common sense in these pieces that you do.
Yes, that is a departure. I think what's happened, although I haven't seen my films for quite a long time, but what I hear is that it's a group of people who are equally, how shall we say, dysfunctional. In this, it was very important to have the main guy be an everyman who didn't have that baggage, although everyone does to some extent. And that really was a departure because it's built around him, a single person, as opposed to the films I've done.
I was almost taken back to The Big Picture, where the figure does the same thing. He's the, kind of the common sense person, and you depart from that in the interim.
Yes, I think that may be true, too. I learn a lot when I'm here. I forgot. I learn a lot about what I do because I never think about it in the same way that you're looking at it, which is in an actual, this is probably all unconscious. In this case, it was semi-conscious to make Chris the Jim Pittock and I created this show to make him the I guess it's sort of me in a way, in the sense that the way I look at people and see things, and maybe that's the closest it is.
Because I wonder if that were the case too in Big Picture, where there's so much absurdity going on around these two figures.
Yes.
That if those two characters were in fact were you to some extent.
Well, it's not literal in the sense.
But yes, you know what I mean.
But it's certainly a good point.
Well, I'm not sure if it's a good point, but it's certainly.
Well, it is. I'm not being facetious. When I do things, there's a tremendous amount that comes out of the unconscious. I don't plot this out in an intellectualized way. It's from observations about the way people talk or look, and it's almost more musical if I hear the way someone talks. That's why when occasionally people will ask who I look up to or who influences me, it's usually musicians and not other filmmakers necessarily, because that has an equal impact that somehow filters its way into the making of a film, or in this case, the television show.
Well, I guess that makes sense, too, because so many of the actors you employ are also musical anyway, so they almost have to be able to improvise in that way that music can demand of people.
Yes, and Chris is as well. We were shooting a scene for Family Tree, and there was a ukulele in this house we were shooting in, someone's ukulele. He picked it up, and he started to sing, and I thought, wow, that's so lovely. His voice is lovely. And that if we continue to do the show, that I would make use of that.
I guess I can ask you this one, if you will, to give the audience a taste of what Family Tree is about.
Ah. Yes, Family Tree is a show about a young man who is a bit down on his luck. His girlfriend has left him. He's been fired from his job. And he's given, at the death of his great aunt, this treasure chest, essentially a box. And in it are these bizarre items, and he has no connection. He doesn't know her. He doesn't know what the premise for that really is. And because he has nothing really going on in his life, he starts to go through it, and this opens up a search for his family.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to Christopher Guest, who's back again after way too long. His new project for HBO is the series Family Tree. And I guess what I find so interesting about it, too, is that in the episodes I've seen the first five so far, there's food around and all the time. People are constantly sitting down to eat. And usually you've had these things are often set in sort of they're social conventions where we get a chance to see that behavior because they bounce around other people. Mm-hmm. And I just found it fascinating because there's so many scenes with Chris sitting down with somebody. And that's I just found it to be such a curious thing.
Wow. You're right, I guess, in thinking about it. But it was not premeditated. It was... it just sort of happened.
Well, in terms of premeditation, then, if you can sort of help me here and tell me what you did for each episode, I mean, what you laid out in terms of the kind of bridging narrative for the characters to play out.
Well, the genesis of this project was my own story in the sense that when my father died, he left a huge amount of material in diaries, papers, books, his toy soldiers from England from, almost 100 years ago. And I started to go through these. I'm still going through it. There's so much material. And the process then becomes when I decide that this is an area to work in. In this case, I'm working with Jim Pittick. We set out to decide that this was perfectly set up for a television series because his search keeps going. This is not a three-act movie where now there's an end because there really is no end, essentially. So we create the characters. We do backgrounds for their whole lives, where they went to school, who they know, what kind of music they like. We write all the storylines for every show in an outline. And the actors provide the dialogue, as with my films. There's no dialogue written down. And it's a challenge because it's not done this way, even though people do versions of this. This is quite different because there's no rehearsal. The actors all know what happens in the scene, who they are, and then I say action and they act and speak.
But unlike the films you've done, because the episodes I've seen don't really build to climaxes in that way, I wondered in structural terms if you did this to make it more of a challenge to yourself or if it's just the way the TV works.
No, I think it's just the way that this story is laid out in the sense that this search, which has many different left and right turns, it just has no easy ending, really. And so it had to be done in this format. And consequently, it's not meant to be cliffhangers, essentially. And I think
But they all are, though, in each episode.
They are, I think, because it's the beginning and we're establishing who people are to get people into this, hopefully. And then I think if we were fortunate to have another season, I think the episodes would exist within themselves. There would be no need to do that because we've met the people and they could stand on their own.
But there is one thing that ties us to much of the other work, I guess with the exception of Big Picture, which is that interest in family lineage. The characters often talk about where they're from and what that means to them and how they think that they're basically a continuation of that lineage, even though in obvious ways they are not, the more they talk about that.
Right.
And this is really a way to almost crystallize that.
Yes, it is, and it's literal. And in my own world, I have done genealogical research about my family, and it turns out that any family has many trees because parents have, there are two people there. The math of this gets very crazy, and when we were laying this out, and we made our own literal tree of all these branches that we have up in our office, and all the actors had them so that they knew when doing scenes what these connections were, assuming they had been given that information within the script, And it's fascinating because you go back and now suddenly if there are four children, now you're in a world of now they marry if they do, and now you have, it just keeps adding to these trails that you can go down. And in my case, I probably have eight family trees at home from the various turns that that takes. And several of them I know a lot about, going back 500 years. So it's, and I'm interested in history, and I read a lot of history, so that has that aspect to it as well. I think people are under the mistaken impression, though, that their lineage is who they are, and then that's the real kind of red herring, in a sense. It's not meant to be in the sense of the show, but I think it's a common misperception, you know, because people think if they look back, and they have those shows on television where people find out something about their lives, and they think, oh, well, that makes sense because, you know, that's, well, it doesn't really. I mean, in an abstract way, it might. And in a sense, because I did the DNA test before I began this project, and I'd been doing all this other research, and you get this piece of paper. It's great for everyone to do this if they can. And lo and behold, big surprise, there's a map of Africa. And there's an arrow that goes out of Africa, and it goes into then what was, well, there was nothing. It was just, it's Turkey or whatever. It had no name then. And it's funny because it's, oh, as if it's going to start in, you know, Brooklyn or something. And so it goes there. And then, of course, it goes in different directions once people left to find better schools or whatever they were looking for 10 million years ago. So that's funny. And in this case, if we get to do another series, he's going to get more specifically into that world where if you do that test, you get sent things in a kit. In a kit, but you get set, it's all this crazy stuff. You know, the people in Italy 5,000 years ago, and you think, what? Okay, I guess so. And it's just indisputable. It's, you know, that's the thing. And so, in the case of our show, we're going to have some version where Chris, in the future, comes to terms with this thing, and it's just there. It is.
But there's that shocking moment in the first couple of episodes, mm-hmm. when he sees an ancestor in Asian garb and immediately makes an assumption. That turns out not to be true.
Yes. Well, there are some odd twists in this show, hopefully. I think every family has difficulty in talking about their family in some way. There are people who don't want to talk about anything. In my family, I went to graveyards in London only a year ago that I didn't realize that my relatives were there. My dad had never said, oh, by the way. And there they are. And I went to several graveyards and, oh, yeah. Okay, there they are. Wow, okay. Eerie, really eerie. And I think in talking to people, there's a lot of that. And it doesn't have to be just that someone's aunt had an affair and then there's an illegitimate child, although there's plenty of that going to go around. It's many things. It's just we don't talk about that. You know, why we used to see these cousins, this is me mumbling. And then the children just say, well, I guess, Mom, I'm not going to keep poking at that. I'm just going to. So it's still of interest to me, even after having, we've been working on this for 2 years already, and the show's just going on, and there's a lot there.
Well, this is the point to take a break. We're digging around the family tree with Christopher Guest. This is a new show on HBO. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Listen to KCRW's 24-hour all-news channel. Stream BBC World Service, NPR, and KCRW programs. Continuous coverage and accessible via our smartphone app or online at kcrw.com.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm talking to Christopher Guest, who's been away way too long. His newest project for HBO is Family Tree. One of the things, though, that I wanted to mention to you, and it struck me just in watching everything, is I can't think of anybody else who works in comedy for whom identity is so important to the characters, having to identify who and what they are, mm-hmm. and constantly explaining that to people as if that were to excuse their behavior in some way or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's so consistent in the way that you work.
Well, I think for actors, to begin with, it's important to know who they are. When you get a conventional script, not that I get a conventional script, but if someone in theory were to send me a script for me to act in, again, I'm making this up. Cause
does that not happen so much anymore?
No, I mean, once in a while. I do what I do, and that's what I do, and occasionally someone will say. But you get a script, and it says male 30s, and you say, wow, I can dig into that. You know, not in my case 30s, because I'm older than that, but in the sense that it's almost the opposite of what I do, which is what I find interesting to give to people is this is who they are. You're going to interpret this, obviously. And that gives them things to latch onto in a scene to make the work really specific. Now, an actor can look at, say, male 30s and do that work. But what I find fun from my standpoint is to create those worlds and the people that inhabit them to the most detail that I can possibly do. That's way more interesting to me from that standpoint. So that's, I guess that's what you're talking about.
It is, because what tends to happen so often in your work is that character explanation supplants exposition, that kind of thing that has to move the plot along. But because it isn't there, I feel like there's something else that happens in its place, which I find to be completely fascinating. And again, I think unique to you.
Well, maybe it's what I find interesting. And I think that actors have fun working with that material. I believe that this process for them, unless they're just not telling me the truth, I think the process of this is really fun for them to do this kind of work. And it really, I've explained this before or tried to make the analogy of playing music, where with friends that I play music with, if you're, say, we're going to play a certain song, we know what key it's in. We're not all playing in a different key. But then we're going to take off and little trips, our little solo trips, and come back to the story, in a sense. The story is the song, and the key has to be in common. I think people have fun doing that. I think it gives them freedom, but there is a very severe structure that they can't just go off into another world. And that's a key thing that I think people don't understand about this kind of work. They think, so anyone can just, they're just talking. But the parameters are very, very strict.
Well, I think, too, when there's that kind of character definition, it really helps actors to make choices, doesn't it?
I hope so. That's the intention, because it's a combination of a blueprint, and then there are areas where they can go off, but it has to be based on what we have on the page in the outlines, because otherwise it's just a mess, and then it's not interesting, and ultimately there's a point in every scene. It's not just, I hope something funny happens. There is a very important point to be made in every scene, and they know what that is.
And watching this on the show, that's interesting because these scenes have a different shape to them. They don't have that kind of payoff that I often see in the movies you've done. The shape feels kind of different than that.
No, it is. And it doesn't have the rhythm, I think, of normal television, because I think my rhythm is whatever it is. It's not line, joke, line, joke, line. There are no jokes written. There are a few that Jim and I have built throughout.
We should say Jim's on the show as well.
Yes, and Jim Piddick plays the owner of an antiques shop in London.
Is he South African?
He plays a South African, which you're the only person that's picked that up. I think most people would just think he's English, but we talked about it and we thought that would just be a nice little twist. And
I found myself chuckling just listening to his accent and then seeing the picture of Nelson Mandela behind him, figuring he would be of the age where that would have been an interesting question.
Well, there
him.
Are two pictures behind him.
Yes.
Willie Nelson and Nelson Mandela, his two heroes. Yes, those are the kind of things where those choices, every choice that is specific and is going to help you, I think, or help me or help the actors, because it's not just some random thing. It will add, I hope, in the depth of what's on camera, what people see, what we can put on a set. It only helps as opposed to just random things, I guess.
Well, this brings me to what I want to talk to you about a little bit, too, and I mentioned before we started the terrific improvisational piece you did for the Oscars last year, because it's about, again, characters are obsessed with something. There's a goal that they get, and they get it in their teeth. And I just found that to be such a remarkable sort of reduction of what you do, where those obsessions come out very quickly rather than being played out over a series of scenes. And I wonder if there was a difficulty in doing that, to just condense it in that way.
Well, it's more of a challenge. I don't remember how long that is. It may have been 2 minutes. I don't really...
It's about four.
Oh, really? Oh, there you go. I know so little about what I do, it's shocking. But thank you.
No, it's interesting because you really just do one thing and move on to the next, don't you?
Apparently, yeah. That's true.
Is there just no interest in just sort of going back, even as a way to sort of, as a prism for your next piece?
I think what after my last film, I decided I wanted to do some more music, and that was in 2006. In 2007, we did a big tour. We did Spinal Tap stuff, and we did an album, a new Spinal Tap album. I did a record called the Baiman Brothers, which was a, I don't know how to describe it. It was acoustic instruments playing music without words. And then we went on a very big tour in 2009, Harry Shearer, Michael McKean and I, where we did 26 cities in the States, and we went to London. And so that was a period of music for about 4 years. And then I started thinking only really after that about something else. So I do move on to things. Going back to what you said about people who are obsessed, I think that's true as well. And again, I don't truly consciously look at this, but I am interested in people's narrow view and their narcissism. And it doesn't require them to be talented or intelligent. And many times it's better not to be, because comedies are not about smart people where everything's going well. Otherwise, that's not going to, you know, if Laurel and Hardy are competent and they have good jobs and happy marriages, I think we're not watching those movies. This is a pretty basic thing. So Eugene Levy and I used to talk about, we would just laugh and fight about the idea of who could play a dumber person or a person that was more out of touch. Or it's not just about being stupid. It's about, but that helps. And that's another difference about Family Tree, because Chris O'Dowd plays a smart person. And that's also a huge departure.
Which, again, for me, goes back to the big picture.
I guess,
It's the same thing where both characters as often enter scene smiling, and the smile melts away as they encounter this thing that they can't battle in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, I came back to that, I guess, because, again, he's the perfect person, because it's a rare combination of assets to have someone that's engaging and smart and funny. It's a very, it's not all that common.
It's the treatment. We're talking the definition of comedy with Christopher Guest, whose newest project for HBO is the series Family Tree. Because I wouldn't even say these people aren't smart, but they just are so busy trying to explain exactly where it is they think they belong and what it is they think they have to get, that they're completely out of touch with anybody else.
Yes.
That it is that narcissism you're talking about.
That's important. And if you look at whether it's Best in Show or the Waiting for Guffman about the theater group, that does fascinate me, because I'm interested in many, many different things. And I go to places that would seem very arcane. There are places that sell feathers that you make fishing flies with. And there are degrees of that. And
how to observe the behavior? Is that why you go to such places?
Well, I do that myself. So I know myself that is, those people do that. That is their foremost interest. And that is very deep, as would be, we were once talking about watches and people who make watches. And I was in Switzerland last year, and we drove from Venice over the Alps to Switzerland. And literally, as we're driving, we say, well, we know before we even go to the hotel that we're going to the Patek Philippe Museum. You realize that? And my wife says, I'm sorry, what? And the two men in the group, they're two women, say, that's where we're kind of where we're heading. And it's literally now on the navigation thing. So we pull up in front of Patek Museum. My wife and her friend Patty drive off to the hotel, and I'm with my friend Hans, and we are like children walking into this place, and our mouths just drop. And now it's just, okay, you can just, let me get my sleeping bag and I'll stay here for a month. And that's the same thing. The people that go there, the man that was in this glass case working on a watch, and that's fascinating to me.
It is to me too. And I think that, because I guess that would be kind of a bone of contention between us, because I think often the characters, there's a moment that they reveal that they're not stupid, but they're just they're just so specific. Though.
Yes, I was being glib.
I know what you mean.
In certain
though.
Cases, they're
because I do think I think the difference for you is that you don't do comedies about stupid people. People.
Well, Nigel Tufnel is not doing a TED talk. Let's put it that way.
But you know, he could.
He could. in he could. You're right. He could. Yes. I mean, there's a savant thing.
But there's also a kind of grasp of the tale that these people have that if you listen to them in at the right moment, sounds like information when in fact it is not.
Yes. And I think it comes back to, in a sense, it is narcissism in a thing. And I think that that's a very powerful thing out there in the world that I hope I'm aware of. And if I'm guilty of that, I try to kind of look at it myself and anyone else I know. But it's a powerful thing.
It is. And I think it accounts for the thing that happens in your comedy so often, where people are talking and not listening to the other people around them.
Well, that's what it is, though. That's the essence of narcissism. And there's some very funny actor jokes, I wish I could remember them, that indicate those things, where actors are talking and then the other people's faces are just glazed, their eyes are glazed over, because this is not about me. How could this possibly be important? This is ridiculous. So they're not there. They check out, and then they come up for air when it's that classic thing of the actor reading the script. They get sent a script and they go, boring, 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 boring. Oh, here we go. Here's my part. And now they get to their part, and then, you know, thing, and they just zero in on that. And it's not just people in show business. It's people all over.
But what separates, again, Family Tree from much of the other things you've done is that you have to have somebody who's asking questions to kind of move this thing along. And that's what Tom, the character played by Chris, does. He has to ask the questions.
And it's a really hard job. And he initially was very frightened of that because he didn't want to be a straight man. And he's not a straight man because he gets to be charming and funny. It's just in a different way. It's not in the same way that the other people are odd characters. And it's way harder to do what he's doing than to be the guy with the odd hair or face or whatever it is. It's a different thing, but I think it's more difficult.
But I do love, though, that you write these characters. You create these characters because the actors write them with you, who are obsessed. And at some point, almost all of them get this faraway look in their eye as they're talking about something, as they can see the paddock factory or that fly that they're tying or whatever as
right.
they're talking.
Yes. Our character, Tom Chadwick, he plays Chris O'Dowd, goes to a theater in Hove, which is in the south of England. And he's on the stage with the man that is showing him around the theater, and that man goes into this reverie about the theater. And he's on a trip. This guy trips out on this world that he inhabits. And it's funny to see Chris observing that and the kind of non-connection, in a sense, even though it's about his family ultimately.
Because I wonder if, as a director, that's the moment where you know that it's working, when you see the actor in the midst of this soliloquy or this monologue about this thing that means the world to them.
Well, I hope they can go to that place, because if they can't, then we could go home early.
But because I've got to figure on some level that that's really what brings you back to these things, giving actors that lead to play these things out and then watching that
yeah.
kind of possession and confidence they get when they start going on these tears.
Absolutely. I mean, I have a smaller and smaller role myself as a physical presence in these things, and I have a small part in this series, but it's the real joy of watching these people work and hearing great people play, really, is what it is.
Well, it's been too long and we're out of time. Thanks for coming back, Chris.
Thanks very much.
It's always a pleasure to have you here. My guest is Christopher Guest, whose newest project for HBO, for which he's creator and executive producer, is Family Tree. Recording engineer at KCRW is Ray Guarner. The show is mixed by Melissa Morton. It's edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I owe Christopher Guest lunch. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.